Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Maytag laundry appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your home's unique needs and style. Shop Maytag 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Raffaella, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Stoma for Life. Today, we're not only focusing on ulcerative colitis, but also on the mental health aspect of living with a chronic illness as a teenager and living in an ostomy. Colitis is more than just a medical condition. It's a daily battle that affects every aspect of life. Characterized by inflammation and ulcers in the digestive tract, it primarily affects the innermost lining of the colon and rectum. The symptoms can be severe and debilitating, including persistent diarrhea, abdominal pain, and rectal bleeding. For teenagers who are already navigating the complexities of growing up, managing this illness can be particularly challenging. Just imagine being a teenager, balancing school, friendships, and extracurricular activities, all while coping with the unpredictable and often painful symptoms of ulcerative colitis. It's not just the physical discomfort, but also the emotional and psychological toll that can be overwhelming. The stigma and lack of understanding surrounding chronic illnesses can lead to feelings of isolation and anxiety. Many teenagers feel embarrassed about their condition, fearing that their peers won't understand or accept them. The journey doesn't end here. For some, managing ulcerative colitis might lead to the need of an ostomy. This procedure can be life-saving and significantly improve the quality of life, but it also comes with its own set of challenges, particularly for a young person. When I woke up with my ostomy after bowel cancer surgery, I was in my mid-50s. I began to explore what life would look like with an ostomy, as I literally had 6 days from diagnosis to surgery. I soon realized that an ostomy isn't just associated with bowel cancer and older people like myself, but it is also part of chronic illnesses and young people. I discovered that countless young people are living with an ostomy after years of suffering and anguish due to a chronic illness. Here on Stoma for Life, I aim to have a space for open dialogue, education, and support, helping you understand that you are not alone on this journey. Today's guest knows this all too well, as she was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis age 15. Join me now in welcoming a remarkable psychotherapist from Halifax, West Yorkshire, with a thriving private practice and a dedicated role of 2 helplines. She brings a unique blend of personal insight and professional expertise to today's show. Welcome, Layla Jones.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's so good to speak to you, and thank you for reaching out and wanting to share your story. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, you were diagnosed at 15, but yeah. Obviously your story has so much more to offer. I think it would be fitting if you could start right from the beginning and take us back to when you first had symptoms.
Yes, I was around the age of 12, and I remember at first I told my mum. And I went to the doctors and they gave me some strange medicine for constipation. And I, for some reason, I decided not to tell my mum when the symptoms continued. So they got worse and worse over the course of those 3 years. It went from sort of some rectal bleeding onto diarrhea. And I remember the exhaustion, the shame. I remember getting the bus home from school and often missing my stop where I'd fall asleep. I was just so exhausted. But I managed to keep it, my symptoms a secret for all that time from friends, from family, boyfriends. I don't even remember how, it was like a survival instinct. But what did develop during that time was a really, really strong sense of anxiety about what might be wrong with me. I would hear about illnesses on the radio, on the TV, and I'd just be thinking, I've got that. I've got that no matter what. I went through phases of thinking I had cancer, AIDS, all sorts of things, and I just thought I was going to die. And still, it wasn't enough for me to approach my parents and tell them that something was going on. And it became habitual. It was a way I just survived. And you mentioned isolating earlier, so isolating. I remember some days waking up and it was just like this dark rain cloud was over me. It was just a horrific time. Then throw in puberty, then throw in, like you say, friendships, education. And it just got to a point where I was incontinent. And so I had to tell my mum. And I have to say that I will never forget her response. I don't know what I was expecting, but she just said, okay, we'll get you to the doctors and we'll get you sorted out. And the relief, the sense of relief was unbelievable. And I wonder as well, knowing what I know now on how connected the mind and body are, it was like, if you pardon this sort of phrasing, it was like a huge release because despite the relief, the symptoms intensified. So you can imagine where I'm going with this. And before I knew it, I was in hospital and getting my diagnosis.
I suppose, I mean, you said you didn't know what it was, and that sort of led to so much more anxiety. And you didn't feel, I'm sure your mother would have spoken to you because the way she reacted obviously was a mother will do anything for their child. But obviously, when you're on the other side, you think, oh, wow, I've got to hide this. I mean, that must have been really a very dark time for you at that time. I just know that when I had a diagnosis, I felt relieved. How did you feel that they've got a name for what it is now, and then you can move forward? Was that like that for you as well?
Yes, definitely. I was in my last year of school. I'd just started the last year doing my GCSEs, etc. So I was missing quite a lot of school, which I was very conscious of. I mean, I didn't like school. I wasn't a particularly amazing student, but I wasn't the worst. But I remember that sort of sense of needing to catch up with my life now or something like that as I start as the symptoms sort of subsided a little and I had support. That sort of element of support and connection was so huge. All those years of isolation, a child turning into an adult, still turning into an adult, all the sense of identity sort of came about as well. So yeah, lots and lots of change there. Obviously, I spoke about the relief and the release as well. But I think the knowing I wasn't going to die was helpful, to say the least.
Course.
There was a future. It gave me a bit of get up and go, if you like. Obviously, there were moments. There were moments I remember that why have I had this? Why did I go through that on my own? That's ridiculous. And I'm still not even sure, if I'm honest, if my family know I had symptoms that long. It's not something I've even addressed, I don't think, or they have.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you find ways to hide it. First of all, you don't want to own up, okay, there's something wrong with me. And when you do know, okay, there is something wrong, you don't want anybody else to find out, and until you obviously couldn't hide it anymore. But I'm glad you have a support network, or that your family was so supportive during that time. So you said, okay, you got your diagnosis at 15, but of course you had a diagnosis, but the illness is there, chronic illness.
Learning to manage that was interesting to say the least. So my symptoms subsided quite substantially at first, really responded well to medication. And then I went to university when I was 19, and just a huge flare up out of nowhere, and it just stayed. I went to university the other side of London. I was in North London, so I used to have to plan the three trains I got in conjunction with where the toilets, what stations had accessible toilets. And then when I got off the train to go to uni, it took me a while. There's a row of shops, and I over time had to figure out which ones might let me use the loo. I had some dodgy experiences there. There were people, yeah, absolutely, it's just a toilet, of course you can use it. And then I remember one lady in the hairdresser, the second time I went in, so sorry, can I use the toilet again? It was a, sorry, we're not a public convenience. That became quite a familiar occurrence, that sort of reaction. So yeah, what then led up to, I never quite recovered from that. Much of it would dip and come up again, flare up, flare up, flare up, but it was never complete. I was never symptom free. So of course comes, I finished my uni. I started working for a theatre company for a little while, and various jobs and bits and bobs. And then it just got to the point I moved. That was it. I moved borough, and I had a new specialist doctor. I went to see him, and he asked me how many times a day was I going to the toilet more than 6 to 8 times a day. And I remember saying, "Try an hour." And he said, "Pardon?" And then he said, "How's your sleep?" And I said, "Oh, I'll probably go to the toilet at least once or twice an hour at night." So he sent me for an emergency X-ray, and he got his mate in. I can't remember who he would have been, his boss of some kind. And they were sort of looking at this X-ray, and the comment was, "Seemed worse, but I think we need to take a closer look." And that was it. I was admitted in, and they removed my colon a few days later.
How old were you at that stage?
26.
26. Wow. I mean, so you had been suffering from the age of 12 until 26 with all these symptoms until finally you had an ostomy. Now, was that always on the card that they would take the colon out? Was that ever spoken about beforehand, or only when you had a different surgeon or consultant or saw somebody?
It was only when I changed. I do remember I had a spate in hospital on my 25th birthday. I remember that. And a lady next to me came in, and she had an ostomy, and she hadn't long been diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And so, we were chatting about bowel movements and everything, as you do, and what worked for her, what didn't. And I remember that was the first time I actually thought, wow, I really hope I don't have to have one of those one day. Oh my goodness. And this come, body image sort of slips in here. I was always worried about being overweight and everything else. And then when I did lose weight because of the colitis, did I look ill? All that sort of thing. So that was the first time it entered my mind. When it actually became a possible reality, I do remember it was almost like the doctors and the surgeons, it was as if they were having an argument over my bed, saying, "No, we want to try this medication. No, we want to slice and dice her." It was not literally those words, but it was as if, like, what? So I can't remember what the medication was, but I did try it. It eased the symptoms ever so slightly, and then within a couple of days they came back. Surgeon came in that it was a Friday morning, and he said, "What would you like to do?" And I went, "Get it out of me, remove it." So I had had a little bit. It was sort of semi-emergency surgery, if you like. I had had a few days to process it. The thought of not having those symptoms, the thought of getting a night's sleep that I hadn't had in well over a decade, just was too appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said the stoma nurse round to me. And do you know, I didn't even really know what it was at this point. They just said a bag, remove your colon, you'll have a bag. I had it in my head that they fix a pipe to you or something, some internal thing, and it comes out. And a little stoma nurse came around to me and she explained to me what it was. I would never have considered myself a squeamish person, but oh my goodness, I remember watching this little video and I was, oh, I don't want that. That's awful. That thing, what is that?
Yeah. But yeah, of course. I mean, that in itself, you first have to get your head around it. But you said it was appealing to have the prospect of having sleep, which you haven't had for over a decade, and being pain-free and symptom-free.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a quick commercial break, but we're going to get back right after the break. And I want to know all about, yes, after the surgery, what life has been like ever since you've had your ostomy.
The station that makes you feel good.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I am joined by the lovely Layla Jones, and she just actually took us on a journey from when she was 12 years old until she was diagnosed at 15, and then had major surgery to actually receive her ostomy when she was 26. Now, you said a stoma nurse came around just to show you what was actually on the cards, what was actually waiting for you. Mm. So obviously, it seems absolutely overwhelming.
Mm. Yeah. And I think the way I sort of coped with it, I think, was humor. One of my favorite defense mechanisms, as it would seem. My partner at the time, I think, again, there was a sense of, will he still love me, want me? So using humor, we went with Morris's girlfriend in a coma, girlfriend with a stoma, things like that. Me and my mum watched a little video about what it might be like having a stoma, or, you know, people sort of sharing their stories. And we made jokes about the fuss people made of making the place all, you know, putting tissues everywhere. I thought, God, how much mess does it make? You know, so the coping mechanism was my humour and my support at the time, which I wouldn't have been without at all.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that also, you know, talking about my own experience, obviously the support network is hugely important, because they are the people that have got your back.
Mm-hmm.
When you do feel, oh, why has this happened to me? Mm-hmm. And they will be there to cheer you up again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had your surgery and they successfully removed it and you woke up in an ostomy, or in an ileostomy, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
of course. And now tell me, what has your life been like ever since then? I mean, it must have been a huge change, obviously, for the better, diagnosis wise or symptom wise.
Yeah, I think it's important to notice here is how adaptable and resilient we can be, human beings. We are sort of built to adapts and change. And I mean, it was a little unfortunate with my one, because it was a successful surgery, but they'd made the hole in my stoma, in my abdomen, a little small for my stoma. So I blocked a few days later and they had to open me up again. So I became very poorly after that, and they had to put the central line in my neck, which really, I really didn't get on with well, and tube up my nose, sort of drain my, keep my stomach drained. And my nostrils were really small. Had trouble getting the tube up there. So that, I think that's where the trauma really started to accumulate. And I remember a registrar come around and said, I'd like to feel your tummy, see if everything's okay. And I had a panic attack, and I've never had one before. So can you imagine sort of having to breathe, trying to breathe, and I've been cut four times, wow, my abdomen in the space of sort of 2 weeks. It was, yeah, that was where the really difficult time started. However, having said that, I did heal really well once I got over that. Mm-hmm. Came out of hospital and just recouped. Everyone, when I went back to work, everyone was very intrigued. Everyone finds it fascinating. And it was from then on I really started to notice the improvement in my quality of life. Don't get me wrong, I still don't have a full night's sleep. I do often have to empty my bag depending on how I time my eating habits. But yeah, some restful sleep, not being exhausted all the time. The sense of guilt went away. Things like missing work all the time, letting people down, not being as energetic and fun for friends and family, that sort of thing lifted. Yeah, definitely a change in direction. And it's just part of me. It's fine. I've never been embarrassed of it. I have my moments when I don't know what to wear. You know, you're choosing clothes. My fashion sense has obviously had to change. But ultimately, it's something I'm incredibly grateful for, to say the least.
Yeah. You know, I've had countless of people on the show already that, just like you, have had symptoms for such a long time that life wasn't actually worth living anymore. Mm-hmm. And then they obviously also opted for the surgery, and they said, you know, looking back, I should have done it much sooner. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was the case with you, but a lot of them have said that. And I just want to actually, for those that are listening now, point out that these are our personal opinions, our personal journeys, but I've heard this from so many, that once your symptoms in a chronic illness have subsided and you're symptom free, you can actually lead a fairly normal life. I as an ostomate, I consider myself leading a normal life, even though one might say, okay, you've got a hidden disability. I don't see it as that.
Yeah, that adaptation to having a disability, I still, like job applications and things, I still don't tick I have a disability, because I don't feel it stops me doing anything. Yeah. If anything, it's enabled me to do things. I will say, it's the one thing it did stop was Taekwondo. I was an avid Taekwondo participant, but I could not bear the thought of somebody booting me in the stomach. So that was the only thing it stopped me doing. But I exercise frequently, always have done to some extent or other. I do the local panto. I've got a bit of a theatre background anyway, you know, all the stuff I love. I've had two children since then as well. It's enabled rather than disabled me, I would say. I'm not running for the toilet. I'm not planning trips around where the toilet is. Always makes me think of that Monty Python sketch where they're doing the marathon for the incontinent. but it's definitely big thing. I mean, there's lots of things to consider. Like, I get dehydrated a lot quicker. I had, for instance, we all had me and my family had a stomach bug a few weeks ago, and I was on the verge of going to hospital because I knew that I was that bad. I just managed to catch it and not spend the time. But those things are manageable when they come up. And it's very rare that I've never had anyone say anything negative, not to my face anyway. Mm-hmm. Everybody's always fascinated. But on that note, I do, it just popped into my head there. I do remember as I was recovering and people weren't as interested back when I was 26, a slight sense of loss, because colitis, no matter how we feel about our illnesses and everything else, and you know, why me, why am I going through this, et cetera, and all the history with it, it was part of my identity. Even being the ill one, always Layla coming out today. No, she's not. She's ill. Oh, again. Oh, Layla's in hospital again. Da 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 da. There is something in that. Whatever that is, it was a lot of my sort of training has sort of opened my eyes to how much we needed to be seen, and maybe that was how I felt I was seen, perhaps. But as time went on, that dispelled as well, and I am my. Ostomy is part of my identity. It's not something I don't obviously don't meet someone and say straight away, by the way, I've got an ileostomy. But these things do come up when people are talking about illness or disability or blah, blah, blah. And the other thing with being open about it is when somebody else is faced with getting some form of ostomy, or somebody knows somebody, can they give you a call? Of course they can. You know, that, how do I go swimming when I get my ostomy and things like that. There's a community, that's for sure. There's which is why I joined that the group on Facebook. In particular, the support, the advice and everything, the just that sense of community around it is really important. And again, like I say, it feeds into that sense of identity, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to know all about your life now, after having had two children, and we're going to tackle that subject when we come back after the commercial break.
Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Are you missing the sounds that matter most? What if you could hear every word, every laugh, and every moment crystal clear without spending thousands on expensive hearing aids? Introducing Audionatum, the world's most affordable FDA-approved hearing aid. With the revolutionary A2 chip, you get premium sound, zero background noise, and a 24-hour rechargeable battery. They even have Bluetooth connectivity to connect to your cell phone or TV. Unlike those traditional bulky $5,000 prescription hearing aids, the Audionatum is 90% smaller, 20 times cheaper, and works instantly. No visits to the audiologist needed. Audionatum has over 500,000 happy customers who have trusted Audionatum to restore their hearing. Our 100% money-back guarantee means zero risk to try. Don't like them? Simply return them and get your money back. They also come with a lifetime warranty. For the next 72 hours, the Audionatum is 53% off. Go to tryhearingaid.com right now to order your pair for only $99. Again, go to tryhearingaid.com to order your pair for only $99. Order now before it's too late, as these hearing aids have sold out over 10 times this year. With Audionatum, you can hear life again.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I'm chatting to Layla Jones. She is a psychotherapist from West Yorkshire and Halifax. Now, we've spoken about your journey from diagnosis to surgery and what life is like after having your ileostomy. So now I want to touch on what you actually do now. And I'm sure this is, you know, having had surgery has shaped your life. It surely has mine. And my surgery is only not even 3 years ago, but something like that obviously is part of you. You said it's part of your identity, but just walk us through what your life is like now. And also, I said you have two helplines that you work for. What does your role entail there?
Yes, so I work on an EAP helpline, which is an employment assistant program, and a trauma helpline as well. So we sort of deal with people who have experienced something traumatic, usually acute trauma. So for instance, we're supporting people who've been through Hurricane Beryl, things like that. They're given the number and they can get some in the moment support. And then the EAP, it's just assessment sort of triage, and then we refer or signpost on. So I hear all sorts on a regular basis, as you can imagine. And yeah, it's I love a journey. I love listening to people's journeys, and being with them through that journey. And you know, that is the basis of therapy ultimately, just being with somebody through their journey, whatever that may be. So I decided to train a few years ago to become a psychotherapist on the back of working with children in a care home. I work quite closely with the clinical team. I'd already done a skills course years ago, so and I've been a carer most of the time, various settings to say the least, including animals. Yeah, that led me to the path of doing my postgrad in counselling and psychotherapy. Obviously, there's a huge sense in me to help people, definitely a helper. And it was one of those things that was always bubbling away under the surface. So I've got my qualification. I have my graduation ceremony next week because I missed it last year. So yeah, it's I have a small private practice which I'm hoping to grow. I'm going to top it up so that I top up my qualification in order to work with children as well. I haven't specialised in anything as yet. Obviously, there's quite a lot of work I do around trauma, but I have thought about the specialty of working with people who'd had sort of traumatic surgeries, you know, big surgeries, ostomies, etc. You know, life-changing stuff. So yeah, so that's where I am at the moment. I've got my two boys, 13 and 3, keep me on my toes. Interesting growing up, mummy's got an ostomy sort of thing. I remember my older lad was always just very inquisitive, like people are, just what's that? Da, 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 we explained. And then my little lad, who's 3 now, he obviously he's at potty training age, so you know, and he's quite funny. When I empty my bag, I said, "Mummy poos differently," and it's it's like, yeah, it's pretty gross. That's poo. But yeah, that's where I'm at the moment. Just being a mum and a psychotherapist, and trying to build my career.
And let's talk about the value of therapy, because I mean, you yourself, having had this from a very early age, do you think it would have things would have been different if you'd been offered therapy at that stage?
I think so, if I'm perfectly honest, because during my training, I had to have 70 hours of personal therapy. And there were so many things I visited during that time that I had never visited before. I didn't realize the hugeness of the fact that I had kept my illness secret, for instance. And it was actually whilst training as well, whilst I was on placement, somebody shared something with me that really evoked a lot of stuff, if you know what I mean. I could feel it in my throat. It wanted to come out, just that. And it was related to health anxiety. And it was a moment where I shared something I've written. And then I wrote a blog as well for the placement I was working for. I'd never written a blog in my life. So I thought, oh, I'll give this a go, and entered a competition. And I wrote about that experience with that client and what it meant as well. And that was mainly due to health anxiety. That wasn't focusing specifically on the illness or the ostomy, it was health anxiety. So I didn't even realize until I had therapy and those experiences how much it still affected me, and triggers. So a couple of years ago, I became quite poorly. Lots of changes were happening in my body. It was post I'd had COVID, and it did lots of nervy things, as well as having a baby as well. You know, they do things to your body as well, and it was very how I processed what I was going through was very reminiscent of what I went through as a teenager. Even though I was surrounded by friends, family, and I was sharing what I was going through, it was still very isolating because it was, I don't think you understand, I'm going to die. This is awful. I've never felt like this. This is terrifying. And I was able to talk through it in therapy. I was able to identify what this and that could be, what your nervous system does when you're chronically scared, what your brain does, your fight or flight mode, and the effect that it can have on you. And that was really, really precious, finding that out, working with that. So if at the time, if I once I had my diagnosis and on my ostomy, if I had had that option, I think that would have been incredible. Even if I felt I didn't need it, I think just having that space to really have it, especially having kept it closed for so long, exploring that. But I did get that chance. I did explore it, got there in the end, and I've got a much greater understanding of what I went through.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. No, good to hear. And look, I mean, this is a couple of years ago. Things have changed also in the mental health world. A lot of things have changed. It is much, well, it's okay to say that you are not okay, which is, I think it's sort of, I wouldn't say it's a trend, but people are more open about it and are more aware of mental health and the effects of the lack of somebody speaking or speaking out about it or having somebody to talk about it. I can only relate with, I've got a teenager at home as well. And we had about a year ago, we had a situation where there was a suicide in his friendship group. And the school was extremely active. They actually had a counselor for him. They brought a counselor in for him because obviously he took very badly to the whole ordeal.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, I would just put it out there. I think that counseling for young people is so important. Mm-hmm. And my son didn't want to go in the beginning because he said, no, Mom, I'm okay. I don't want to talk about it. And I said, yeah, but maybe it's better to talk to somebody that doesn't know you or us or is not part of the family setting.
Yeah.
And, you know, he embraced it. It was really wonderful to see. He said it actually, yes, it helped him. And I'm just trying to it doesn't have to be something as tragic as what my son had been going through, but a chronic illness is terrible in itself, as you know. And having perhaps, yes, schools where counseling is offered for whatever problems there are, I think would pave a way of much happier adults, if I may say so.
Yeah, yeah, normalizing struggle.
Yep.
We in this world, we are supposed to struggle, but we are supposed to get through it. We build resilience, don't we, through that? And we build resilience through support. We build connection, you know, we build resilience through having a sense of purpose, a sense of identity, all of that just all coming together. And it's absolutely crucial. It's absolutely crucial.
Yeah, yeah. As far as I understood, you're only at the beginning of your journey as a psychotherapist.
Mm.
But is there a way of people that want to speak to you, how they can reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Am I allowed to share my email address?
Yes.
Yeah, it's Layla Jones Psychotherapy. It's a long one, at gmail.com. More than happy.
Yeah.
And it's Leila Jones Psychotherapy.
Okay, excellent. You know, this journey we are on, obviously other people listening in, well, that's what I said, I open the dialogue. I want people to know that they're not alone in this journey. I commend you on having chosen this career path because obviously speaking to other people, you have to look after yourself as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's Thank not you. Just, I mean, you at the end of the day, you're going home to your boys and you've got to look after yourself. But the way I see you as an extremely strong woman and you've gone through so much already and you've got so much to give. It's been absolutely wonderful chatting with you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for giving me this space. Like I said, the power of connection and sharing and going on journeys is everything. Thank you.
Now, tell me, just to close off, if there are listeners out there, either parents who might have known or might have noticed that their child might have a problem, how to tackle it, or for young adults that know, okay, I have a problem or I've been diagnosed, but what will the future be? Have you got any word of advice?
For a parent who suspects their child might be ill, I will always say, giving them that time and space for them to be seen and heard. Reassurance has its place, but I think that space is the most important. I think when I first approached my mother and it was passed off as something else, I think that might have been my shutdown point for some reason or other. Oh, it's just this, have that, you're fine.
Yeah,
it would be not to reassure too much, just listen, because to what they're going through, that lived experience is serious, even if it does turn out to be nothing, and they'll be scared. So let them have that space to be scared with you.
Yeah. Oh, this is valuable advice. And listening, I mean, that is just so important. Like, listen to learn and to hear the other person and not to answer.
Yes.
A lot of people just, they actually have an answer in their head before the story is finished and they don't carry on listening. So this is really valuable advice, Leila. I've absolutely loved chatting to you. I wish you all the best going forward. I am sure the way I see you, the way I've experienced you, you will be a great success in your career. And I wish all the best going forward.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute honor to be here today. Thank you.
Take care. All the best. And bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Are you missing the sounds that matter most? What if you could hear every word, every laugh, and every moment crystal clear without spending thousands on expensive hearing aids? Introducing Audionatom, the world's most affordable FDA-approved hearing aid. With the revolutionary A2 chip, you get premium sound, zero background noise, and a 24-hour rechargeable battery. They even have Bluetooth connectivity to connect to your cell phone or TV. Unlike those traditional bulky $5,000 prescription hearing aids, the Audionatom is 90% smaller, 20 times cheaper, and works instantly. No visits to the audiologist needed. Audionatom has over 500,000 happy customers who have trusted Audionatom to restore their hearing. Our 100% money-back guarantee means zero risk to try. Don't like them? Simply return them and get your money back. They also come with a lifetime warranty. For the next 72 hours, the Audionatom is 53% off. Go to tryhearingaid.com right now to order your pair for only $99. Again, go to tryhearingaid.com to order your pair for only $99. Order now before it's too late, as these hearing aids have sold out over 10 times this year. With Audionatom, you can hear life again.